Have you ever had one of those weeks where you just don't get anything done? Well, I had one of those weeks. So this episode is going to be a short episode, but there's a few things I think that are important to go over. One of them is just with spring fever imminent. And I say that with the day, okay, we had flurries and absolutely zero accumulation. So I guess that's what comes with a proper flurry, is you get, you know, three flakes and hey, there it is. So a few things to discuss in this pre-spring fever euphoria. Yeah, that never happens. But we'll get into it. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 228, Food and Freedom Once a Week for Life. All right, folks, we're dispensing with some of the usual opening stuff. Episode 228 is an interesting one to me, only mildly. I worked at a restaurant called 228, and it was geniusly called that because that was the address. Tells you absolutely nothing about what to expect. Turns out, it was a fun job. A rather meaningless modern Italian. What the hell does that mean? I'm not going to go into it. But we did lots of fun things there. I enjoyed that place. So I mentioned in the tease there, distractions. And so the scare quotes Chinese balloon was a distraction for a little bit. And then the people on Twitter who were terrified because there's a balloon in the air. Yeah, the scare quotes. I have my strong reservations about where it came from, but I don't really care. I did mention spring fever, and that's kind of coming because the sky is turning blue here, which is better than the sky being gray, which was the case in Michigan for all of February. Here it was in most of January. And it is absolutely just suffocatingly depressing. So a blue sky, the green pine trees, no snow, which probably is sort of bad, but I don't mind it. It just sort of feels when it gets 40 that spring's coming. And that means, excuse me, getting ready for gardening and thinking about how am I going to manage to do that this year without the urban deer eating everything. And boy, the deer problem here is terrible. And you know, without the government, what would I do without the deer problem? I have a solution, but it creates a bigger problem. But oh, man, the venison. So the distractions are aplenty, and if you follow your local, don't do that. Don't follow your local politician on any social media. They're just aggravating. But if you do that, then you're aggravated, because I'm aggravated, and that's how I know that happens. There's lots of things, lots of ways to be distracted. The price of eggs, the price of gas is going up, the price of everything is going up, and that feeling of loss of control, that no matter what you do, those things are going to happen. And I think that one of the possible outcomes of that is it's easy when you hit the grocery store. I did that today, and I'm a spectacular grocery shopper. I know prices. I'm very good at prices, and I go to four different stores to get stuff. Yes, I know that costs gas. But I know my prices, and even at that, I'm like, oh, what the heck, man? Crazy amount of cash. So I know how frustrating shopping can be, and you're looking at the stuff and thing. I know that it's just to end. So the point here is buying food or scare quotes food, not food at all, boxes of ingredients made by DuPont or somebody that isn't food, that looks like food. It's very easy to get into ruts of comfort and convenience and habit where we eat things that are the sad standard American diet. And generally that looks like crap out of the freezer case. I'm not opposed to the freezer case in general. But sometimes the things in the freezer case are best left right where they are. Sometimes a bag of French fries is fine. Bag of tater tots is questionable, but boy, they taste good. Yeah, I get it. The dinosaur nuggets, leave them alone. Get the real nuggets. Or if your store sells the breaded chicken tenders, get those. So I want to really use these few minutes just as kind of a reminder that I have discussed with people who know these things better than I do about the standard American diet. That was Jimmy on episode 11. And so Jimmy is full on keto. And I think I actually haven't, I plan actually, things all over the place are going crazy. But one of the goals is to speak to Jimmy about one of his new areas of focus, and I'm sort of getting ahead of myself, but he was very much going full keto, and then I think he read things and sort of altered his plan a little bit. I was pretty rigid about it, and I've gone off the strict full keto path to include now some things that generally previously wouldn't have been included, like pasta and potatoes, some crackers that goes with the cheese and the salami. And part of that is I think there's a good reason to include some carbs in the diet. Now, this is where niche distractions can come into play. Since I do pay a fair amount of attention to the food world in terms of nutrition and dieting, food and dieting, I think, connotes a pejorative, a negative, and I mean it to say only a chosen, deliberate eating plan. So the carnivore folk are, that would be their diet plan. There's at least one fellow who's famous or infamous for his hashtag no sugar, no NSNG, no sugar, no grain, and I think he's probably pretty comfortable now with that particular niche, and good for him. But I think that there's some good reasons to include, well, not sugar, but I think there's a good reason to include some grains and certainly some legumes, peanuts, unless you're allergic, then don't eat them then. And I'm sure the folks who prefer their specific niche lifestyles have very good reasons to do it. And they're going to explain for as long as they're allowed why that choice is the right choice for them. So part of my certainty that it isn't the right choice for me comes from the other guest who was episode 14, that's Kyle Momotis, the biochemist. Now, the thing that I think I've mentioned before, I'm going to say it again, the thing that impresses me about Kyle is the same thing that keeps Kyle from winning millions of dollars. Kyle will reevaluate information he holds as certain when presented with new information that challenges that. And what that means is Kyle opens himself up to the risk that the current thinking on X is this, and if I examine this new piece of data, I might find that I completely changed my mind about X. And Kyle will completely change his mind about X because he's presented with new information, and Kyle will do his due diligence to make sure that it fits and it's right and it sounds good. And then it will be the new thing. And that's an impressive philosophy and an impressive conviction to accept new information into old thinking and change to new thinking. There's a fair few people who are making lots of cash who don't do that, and good for them. So I've had more than a few private chats with Kyle, really looking for some information and some answers and trying to square pegs around whole information, trying to sort out these carnivore advocates have a very compelling argument. It sounds good. It's like, wow, yeah, all right, I'm on board. But I think, like the vegan advocates, there's something missing. If you want to be heavy veg with a little bit of light meat, I don't care. If you want to be all vegan, I don't care. I'm not interested in you converting me. Do what you wish. But in my conversations with Kyle, who, as a refresher, in case you haven't heard that episode or haven't heard me talk about Kyle, has gone through the carnivore, the keto, the paleo, the probably Pritikin, Whole 30. Kyle did all raw. Everything. Fat, tripe, intestines, muscle. Everything raw. I saw him on a video making a coffee and something else shake, protein shake, which included raw chicken livers. So if there is an eating style philosophy out there, it seems that Kyle has pursued it more than for just 10 minutes. Some of these things he did for months on end. So, based on his knowledge of these things, I hold his knowledge and information and opinion in high regard. And it is his opinion that Granny was right. That's actually my phrase for what he keeps telling me, that Granny was right. You need carbs, you need fat, and you need protein. Now, do you need donuts? Probably not. Do you need cauliflower? Probably more so. Or broccoli or green beans? Probably don't need kale. Nobody needs kale. But if you like it and you want to eat it, go ahead. So some of those crackers, some of those nuts, some of those grains, I do pull back and I restrain myself to some degree, some days better than others, on the sugar. Chocolate is still, we're still friends. But my sugar consumption is way, way down. I don't have any official number. It's just way, way down. And there's an interesting thing that has been going on for, good Lord, over 40 years. When I was in eighth grade, I guess what's that, 12, 13 years old, I had what my grandma used to call heartburn. I think now they call it acid reflux. It was bad. I mean, it was It was awful. It was painful. It was unmanageable. I was eating Tums like candy, and it was barely touching it. And so we did the things that doctors knew how to do. We're going to give you this barium, you drink this gigantic, enormous quantity of really yucky stuff. We're going to take x-rays of your stomach. And guess what they found? Not a damn thing. Well, it took 40 more years to figure out, and I figured this out within the last 3 years, that sugar was causing this incredible acid problem. What I have deduced, and this is pure speculation, is that the high amount of sugar, and several candy bars a day on top of whatever else I would sneak, and sodas, lots and lots of sodas. So the huge amount of sugar, this is my guess, caused a profound imbalance of my gut bacteria, making very hospitable for all the bad guys and not so much hospitable for the good guys. But I'm pretty sure that in the eighth grade, which was mid-70s, nobody ever considered the idea that the microbiota in your stomach was anything more than just it wasn't even there. It was just this pool of hydrochloric acid. That's what's in your stomach. You eat food, it gets digested by this very strong acid. I don't think anybody would have ever considered the possibility that something could live in that environment. But so we now know that's not entirely true at all. So I'm not faulting the science of the time, but I think that that's probably the case. So what that means, and having cut back on sugar immensely, some days to zero, when I eat too much, and that line is not very, very far from zero, when I eat too much sugar, that old acid problem comes back. I'm like, oh my, okay, I know what this is. I know what happened. And so the fix is stop eating the sugar, but the fix also is that long, they call it intermittent fasting. It's just really eating a late breakfast and not eating past a certain hour at the nighttime. So my cutoff is generally around 10 o'clock at night, and my breakfast is usually around 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And that 12 hours is enough time for the system to get rid of the sugar, deal with it however it deals with it, and that acid problem goes away. I would have enjoyed knowing that when I was in eighth grade, but I know it now, and so I'm telling you, sugar causes more problems than just the spikes in insulin, and that's it's a misleading phrase. I talked to Kyle about this. So this spike in insulin, what does that mean? So when I hear people say that on podcasts talking about these things, I'm thinking it's going from, let's say, insulin's at zero. Let's say insulin's at five. I have no idea. I don't know anything about insulin. Numbers. So let's say it's at five, and that's a healthy number, and spikes. So it's going to go to 105. Well, it could, but so this is where it gets weird. Any increase in insulin production is going to be called the spike. So if it goes to seven, you've had a spike in insulin. Well, that it seems misleading a little bit to say you've had a spike in insulin when it turns out that it was just a speed bump of insulin. But the point is that eating anything at all, sugar, fat, protein, is going to, by the nature of how the body digests food, you're going to have an increase in insulin. If you're eating the sugar bowl, downing it with some Pop-Tarts and Jujubes and a Mountain Dew, well, then you might actually get a for real spike in insulin. So we can avoid those drastic spikes by managing what goes in the system, but to avoid insulin increase production at all means to not eat at all, and that's not a very useful, helpful solution to the problem. But choosing the right things is a much better choice, and insulin's going to go up, so just deal with it. Picking the good foods is the better choice than worrying about an insulin bump in the numbers. So that's really what I wanted to share was with spring fever coming, and what that means is that fruits are going to be coming out. So, and this is one of those areas where the gurus in their particular niche, and if those niches are away from fruit, because fruit has fructose, and fructose through digestion process turns into glucose, which turns into fuel for the body. If there's too much, it turns into fat on the body. There's more to it than that, but that's not too far away from what happens. The advantage to eating whole fruit is that you get also the fiber, and yes, fiber is good. Even forget your 70s old brand, fiber is healthy. Fiber is good for you, but you also get the nutrients in the fruit, and that's good. And then there's the thing that I've talked about with other people on the show that isn't measured in any microscope or any special nutritional gizmo that the fancy labs have. The thing from fresh fruit, if you choose the right fresh fruit, the real amazing thing is that it's kind of a spiritual satisfaction. Now, a good navel orange can do that. They're real messy. I used to know a guy who had grapefruit, pink grapefruits, near Fort Myers in Florida. And he was in Tallahassee, and he would wait, and wait. Everybody in Indian River is picking their grapefruits in November, December. He's like, nope. First frost in Fort Myers, somewhere in mid-January, he drives down and picks hundreds of cases of fruit and then brings them back. And sold a lot of them overseas, but then I would buy a couple of cases for the restaurant. And they were hands down, and I still remember them, the sweetest, most delicious, best pink grapefruits I have ever had, and everybody who ever got them said, "My God, these are so good." Well, he waited. He knew what he was doing. So there is an emotional / spiritual satisfaction to really great fresh raspberries or an apricot or a peach. Oh, buddy, man. You get a good peach and just, man, that can't be measured. And so what? Your insulin goes up. Who cares? So does your emotional satisfaction, and your relaxation increases, and your just this whole peace of mind of just, wow, this was a spectacular peach. You can't measure that with any chart. You can't measure that with any piece of electronic equipment, except you can't deny that that is a very real effect. And to go get that on purpose, why would you not do that? Of course, go get that. Go get it again. Go get two. So I'm all about, yes, eat the fresh fruit. Eat your favorite one. Go get it. Go pick it if you can. Just savor it. It's like, wow, this is fabulous. So it's late for resolutions, and I don't do resolutions, but it's a really good idea to avoid useless distractions. And politics is a useless distraction. And as spring fever grabs your brain with its cold little hands, that's okay. Think about what's going to go in the garden. Think about, am I going to have a garden? Think about, how am I going to kill the urban deer that eat my garden? Don't tell me that one, though. You can send me the venison. It's big shipping, but I wouldn't complain. And focus on the things that do matter. And what does matter is your health and wellness and what goes in your body to create and perpetuate more health and wellness. And yes, that does include raspberries or blackberries in August. Here they come in August. They're fantastic. Oh my God, they're so good. Peaches or apples or apricots or whatever, or plums. Whatever it is, enjoy it. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I will put the links to both of the episodes I mentioned, episode 11 with Jimmy, the keto episode and the SAD, Standard American Diet, and episode 14 with Kyle about sugars and fats. Both of those are pretty long episodes. They're easily over an hour and a half. So it might have to be to and from work. But some of the episodes, some of the podcasts I listen to go on and on and on. So it takes a couple of days, and I understand that. I think that's a good way to get in through February and just start getting grounded on us. So. If all goes well, and that's always a big if all goes well, I'm going to have a members bonus content up on the Patreon about a little bit about something about fish I didn't quite cover, which was what to do with your previously frozen, commercially purchased supermarket fish fillet. So that'll be up on the Patreon, and for you subscribers, go check it out. And for you who are interested, the information will be on the show notes page under support. And thank you so much. Appreciate you being here, and see you next week.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.